Welcome to September's Open Systems Insight, sponsored by Leidos.
Designing systems to be plug and play may be one of the most important jobs of an engineer. And when you're talking about weapon systems and systems of systems, the concept becomes even more critical. That's why Dr. John Snodderly, the Learning Director of Engineering at the Defense Acquisition University, teaches tens of thousands of system engineers across DoD about the benefits of open systems and open system architecture. John, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Well, I'm really pleased to meet together with you today.
One of the things we're talking about through this month is something that's commonly known as open systems. Sometimes open systems architecture, sometimes modular open systems. But anyway, you kind of slice and dice it. The whole point of the discussion is that the government and you know, specifically DoD have really been looking at this concept of open systems, of open system architecture, to improve how they develop their technology systems. So let me start at the beginning here. Your role as Learning Director of Engineering at DoU. Talk a little bit about your role, and then we'll get into that open systems piece.
Okay, basically my role is I'm responsible for the curriculum development for 40,000 engineers in the Department of Defense. In the engineering career field, which is an awesome task. And we build courses to teach the students and keep the policies, the change rapidly up to date. We have to keep them up to date because things always change in this business.
Oh, especially DoD, between Congress and DoD, you get plenty of change. So as the Learning Director of Engineering, as you're developing that courses, where does open systems fit in? Is that a big piece of the curriculum development? Is it a small piece? When you talk about open systems architecture, modular open systems, whatever we want to call it.
Well, it's an important part. It's an important part of the system engineering curriculum that we teach here, especially in our architecture lesson, as you might guess. Open system architecture fits into our course And we want to make sure the students have that approach, as we'll talk a little bit later on what that is and why it's important to the system engineer. It's taught in one of our modules in the Level 3 course and our Level 2 course. We have three levels of courses in the certification program, and the engineers want to get certified at Level 3. Everybody likes to be certified so they can get promoted.
One thing that occurs to me as you're going through it is, this is the Defense Acquisition University, right?
Yes, it is.
And why is system engineering being taught from an acquisition school versus, let's say, the National Defense University or a more what we call maybe, you know, traditional school? Where does the DAU fall into this?
In the first place, system engineering is about design. And when we talk about design in an acquisition program, our acquisition programs are different than a commercial acquisition. We're talking about defense weapons systems, and they're very complex. System engineering is a methodology and also a career for people that try to design things. And if you look at our life cycle of a weapon system, at the start, we have the technology side that is always rapidly changing. We have to define what the requirements are at the early end. That's what the system engineers do. So we define what the requirements are, and then we start working on the design. The contractor, from the government standpoint, the contractor is working on design, but the government labs are also working on technology. And as we progress along in time, things change. The requirements might actually change as we go along. The threat might change. There are a lot of things that can happen in the development of a weapon system. So it's important for people to understand why we need good system engineering up front and early, to develop an approach, know what the requirements are, and refine those. If you get a poor requirement, then the design's not going to be right. And we want our designs right because we're building things that the future people who go to war is going to have, and we want to make sure we bring our sons and daughters home safely.
I think that's a great explanation about why the systems engineering piece is so important. I think so many times people overlook it as part of acquisition. So let's jump into, where is open systems architecture, open systems, as I said, modular open systems architecture, where does that all fit in this discussion from a systems engineering course structure?
Well, when you talk about an open system, let's probably ought to talk about what one is. And the basic, I always like to think of an open system as like a wall plug. I can plug in anything in a wall plug, and I have a nice wall plug that goes in, and it fits into the receptacle. However, if you have a Samsung phone and I do have an Apple phone, and I want to charge, you want to charge your Samsung, and you say, "Can I borrow your charger?" It's not going to work because the Apple is different than the Samsung, and vice versa. So those are closed systems, and it would be a lot easier if everybody had the same charging mechanism. In fact, then you could probably solicit other companies to build them, and they might become very, very cheap along with the interaction. So that's if you want to think of something very simple in terms of what is an open system. Now, as we get more complex, we're talking about a weapon system. We're talking about a system that has a lot of subsystems. And if we go a little larger, there are systems of systems. So it's much more complicated. So we want to make sure that they all interplay together. And in the past, what we've had is each system has subsystems that are individually developed by other contractors, which have unique connections, unique interfaces with the total system. So they're very unique. So if the thing breaks or if you have to get a new model of it, you have to go back to the contractor who builds the subsystem. And he's locked, and we call that vendor lock. And from the government side. Now, from the contractor side, well, it makes sense that he wants to make some money. He's invested all this research into the subsystem, and now you're going to compete my subsystem with other vendors? And the answer for the government side is yes, we are. And so it's tricky to get them to sign up to that, and that's one of the challenges when you go to open systems in terms of contracting, to get the contractors to agree to do that. And then the question of who owns the data rights, et cetera. So there are a lot of different aspects of developing an open system that you might not think about at the start.
The use of this charger is a great example of what's an open system versus a closed system. How many times have we all faced that where, oh, I need a charger, I only have the wrong charger that doesn't fit. Why can't all the chargers be the same? So and as you go through weapon systems, so the idea of using open systems architecture into a systems engineering development or a lifecycle model, that makes sense for many reasons, as you described. So maybe talk about where that fits in. You said it's one course of many, but this idea of open architecture, open systems architecture, the importance of teaching the DoD engineers about how this works and why it works and why it's important, that's really what you're trying to get through in the courses to a certain extent.
Yes, and it has direct impacts on costs, reduce the development cycle time, the total life cycle cost. And if you think about later on in life, our systems are designed, unlike Apple, which has now announced a new iWatch, and I have an iWatch on, so now I got to get another one, right? They keep changing all the time, and eventually you can't buy that system anymore because 10 years down the road, that subsystem, they're maybe not making the parts for it anymore. But we build systems that last 30 to 50 years or longer. The B-52 is aircraft for the Air Force has been around. It's supposed to be around for over 80 years, something like that. So we build things that last a long time. So when you go out to buy parts, if it's no longer manufactured, then you've got to start up a manufacturing line and pay a lot of money then to get that part or design a new subsystem altogether. So by making them open system and making them interact, you know, so you know what the interface is, then you can it's more easily replaced.
Dr. John Snodderly is the Learning Director for Engineering at the Defense Acquisition University. Hear more of the interview after a quick break. I'm Jason Miller.
IT modernization, a far-reaching concept when you think about it. That's why Leidos has rolled out a clear-cut, user-centric approach to IT modernization that boosts productivity while securing the IT backend. Learn how Leidos is advancing the digital workplace with proven solutions in collaboration, mobility, cloud, DevOps, data centers, and network modernization. Visit Leidos.com/modernize to see the approach. That's Leidos.com/modernize.
Dr. John Snodderly, the Learning Director for Engineering at the Defense Acquisition University. Give me a sense of the acceptance of open systems. As you talk to engineers, do they get it? Do you see a light bulb go off where they go, oh, I see why this is so important? or is it still maybe not as well understood as you think it should be? I mean, the way you explained it, it's very easy. I get it now, and I'm by no means an engineer.
Yeah, they do. They pick it up, and they can see the advantages to it. Models and modeling, and of course, also we do simulations. Modeling and simulation goes hands in hand. And so, if you do a simulation, for instance, you can prove that having interfaces that are open are the best way to go. So engineers are very, very aware of what the needs are for interoperability. Same thing with if you think of NATO, they talked about interoperability with NATO. Well, they all use the same ammunition. Well, there's a reason for that, because the ammunition's all the same. You can pick up the ammunitions from a French gun or a British gun and load it into an American gun. I mean, wartime is that way. You want to be common in terms of your weapon systems in some areas.
Do you get a sense that open systems is being used in DoD? I had a great conversation with someone from the Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute, and they talked about some examples of, say, the Navy is big into it. But then they also said it's not as being picked up as quickly as others. And I guess from the sense of when you educate and teach the upcoming systems engineers, it seems to me from the outside like a no-brainer. Why wouldn't you accept this and try to go in that direction? But do you get a sense of whether when you talk to old students or former students, or when you talk to people who come in from level two to level three, and are they saying, oh, this is never used, no one likes open systems? I mean, I find that hard to believe, but I'm just trying to get a sense from your perspective.
Oh, no. I don't ever see them saying, hey, this doesn't make any sense. In fact, it always makes sense to them as well. You're right about the Navy. The Navy was very, at the start of this, was pushing open systems because of the fact of their ships, and they have so many different parts. If you think about configuration management, which is also a part of system engineering, we have to manage all of the different parts and pieces in a large organization like the Army or the Navy or the Air Force. Having a common interface really simplifies a lot of things. Otherwise, you've got to have a bunch of translator boxes. You're going to have different plugs, different cords, different everything. And it just becomes a mammoth job then to do supply and support. So it makes a lot of sense to the Army as well as the Navy and the Air Force, of course, with their aircraft. Having open systems makes it a lot easier to maintain the aircraft. When you're taking a module in and out, you just replace it with another module. So we went to modular open system architecture. And then we went to modular open system approach. And the difference between modular open system architecture and the approach is not only are we talking about architecture, but we're talking about a business strategy. And I talked a little bit about that earlier, where we don't have vendor lock. And it's to our advantage that we can then get better competition and get the cost down. And, today, cost environment, it's difficult to building these complex systems are very expensive, and so anywhere we can save cost is a good thing, especially if it's going to increase the reliability of the system. And reliability, incidentally, is another part of system engineering. And the engineers like reliability because there's lots of equations in reliability. So when we teach that, they, oh, yeah, good, we got equations again now. So it makes them happy.
You bring up cost. Do you guys have... Has there been any research around how the cost differential between using open systems and not using open systems? Or is there any way to also quantify it? If you don't have the same maybe percentage or figures, is there another way you guys quantify that open systems make more sense, just beyond the fact it's logically it makes more sense?
Well, we know that, and there's been a lot of studies on competition. We know competition brings down the cost. It just always has. And if you can compete all those boxes, you're going to save a bucket full of money on a weapon system. And, it always brings the cost down. If you compete, your competitor figures out a way to do it cheaper. And as long as it works, in other words, as long as it has the same power, weight, and size, for instance, we have to put in an aircraft or a ship or a tank, whatever, then it's to our advantage to compete it. And we've known that for years. But, if you can't compete it, then it's kind of sole source, and we're locked in. We have to pay the the going price, then we have to negotiate it down if we can. You can always threaten to buy from someone else, but if they own the data rights, they in fact can say we're not going to give them to you. So that gets into another thing that we don't have time for. Intellectual property is also a big piece of open systems. And who owns the intellectual property and who owns the data rights and the data package. And the government wants to have government purpose rights so that we can use it, especially they have to if they're using government money for the research part, we can get government purpose rights.
Dr. John Snodderly is the Learning Director for Engineering at the Defense Acquisition University. One more break and then stay tuned for the last part of the interview. I'm Jason Miller.
IT modernization. A far-reaching concept when you think about it. That's why Leidos has rolled out a clear-cut, user-centric approach to IT modernization that boosts productivity while securing the IT back-end. Learn how Leidos is advancing the digital workplace with proven solutions in collaboration, mobility, cloud, DevOps, data centers, and network modernization. Visit Leidos.com/modernize to see the approach. That's Leidos.com/modernize.
Finishing up our talk with Dr. John Snodderly, the Learning Director for Engineering with the Defense Acquisition University. You make a compelling case of why open systems make so much sense. Talk maybe a little bit about why aren't we seeing a stronger uptick. I get the impression, at least, that this is still, well, we'll call it new because it's been around for decades, but this is not as widely accepted as we should. And maybe it's a perception issue, and maybe it is more widely accepted and the perception that it's not. But do you get a sense of why open systems architecture is not the standard practice, or maybe do you think it is?
Well, what we're seeing today is a push towards digital engineering. We're digitizing everything. And modular open system approach is an important part of digital engineering. So as we begin to, we are well into the digital age now, and everybody's accepted that. And we're a little bit behind in the government and digitizing everything. So there's a huge push today to do that. And the idea of modular open system architecture makes sense in the digital engineering world. Software, for instance, is if you think about how software is advancing, it's advancing at almost an asymptotic rate. It's just huge in terms of the technology and the pushing it. So with all the technology push and everything else, the only way we can handle that is through our computers and computer systems. And so the government is pushing that very hard today. And that's why there's suddenly a push. More of a push for modular open system architecture and modular open system approach because they recognize, okay, in order to keep up with it, we need to have the interfaces to be common, and then we can make the changes, and we can give these software houses, okay, here's the inputs and outputs that's into this box. If you can make it run faster, here's the speed requirements that we have, and yeah, it can handle a lot more speed. Oh, you can do it faster? Well, our system can act better if you do it that way. So those are kinds of the considerations when you're talking about the design and how things are changing today. And as you know, everything is changing. If you drive a new car, you know it's run primarily by software. Everything is run by software, just about.
You make a good point about the software piece, and this is where the idea of agile or iterative development comes in, DevOps, DevSecOps, whatever we're going to call it these days. And is hardware also hardware was well before the software piece, but is hardware starting to follow a very similar suit when it comes to kind of this DevOps methodology? And that's why open systems is obviously picking up some steam?
Sure is. If you think of additive manufacturing, for instance, that's another whole subject on its own, where you can print things, which I think is kind of an amazing turn of events. You can print piece parts, for instance, in the field. If something breaks, then you just put the digits in and print it out with the right materials, of course, and the right machine. And so it's really a blend between hardware and software.
When people hear open systems and open architecture, they think, oh, it's open source. And I know that that's a very much a software discussion, but is there a relationship that you see between this idea of open source and open systems? They're not the same thing by any means.
Yeah, there is some, because it's not the same, but you know, we talk about COTS, commercial off-the-shelf software, and for IT systems, for instance, that's the way the government's gone, pretty much. We use Microsoft products and the products that everyone else uses, and computers that everyone else uses on our desktops. when we talk about a weapon system, it's entirely a different animal. It's the software probably classified to start with. It's doing things that other people don't know what it's doing, but that's the reason. We have to build systems that are very, very, very more complex than anyone else's, and very more capable than anyone else's, so that no one will mess with us. And the idea is, we in the Department of Defense don't want war. People think, oh, you guys are building things for war. No, we're building things to prevent war. We want the bad guy to be afraid of us and not to attack us. We want to have our systems so well designed and developed that our sons and daughters and our grandsons come home safely. And that's what motivates me.
One of the things about when you talk open systems and open systems architecture, as I said, this has been going on for many years, and you guys at the Defense Acquisition University have been teaching it. And I think I read, Dr. Snyderly, you've been in the Defense Department for 55 years, which is just incredible. So you've seen a huge change. Can you talk maybe a little bit about the change you've seen and as it relates to how education happens around open systems architecture? How has the discussion changed over the last, again, 15, 20 years or more?
Oh yeah, well it has evolved to the point where now we're talking about digital engineering and modular open system approach, which is a little different than that was at the start. At the start, you were just talking about open systems, and we were talking about the fact that interoperability was one of the big things that we were talking about, and having common interfaces. Now we're talking beyond that and talking into the ideas of system of systems, which we didn't talk about. But if you think about system of systems and open architectures, and that makes sense also. The best way to think about that is if you think of a ship, a combat ship. The ship has all kinds, it is a system of systems, easily seen. It has guns, it has radar, it has missiles. They're all different systems, and they have to play together. And then you have communications between them, and it's a very complex, tons of software on a ship. So that's a very complex, and you want to make sure the architectures play together right for each of those systems. And sometimes the architectures play differently, and we get results that we didn't expect when we go into testing. Maybe the radar jams one of the other systems. No, we didn't want to know it's going to do that. What frequency are we using? Oh, but that's our frequency. And that would be that probably wouldn't happen today, but in the past it's happened. We've had, when we talk about EMI and electromagnetic interference, we've had radars open and close people's garage doors. So, there are a lot of things that interplay here. Seeing it evolve over time, I've seen our education evolve. I think we do a better job today of defining what we do. I think we've actually helped the acquisition process through our education. I think that that's proven fact, but the things become more and more complex. Complexity is driving the cost, as well as software. So there's a lot of things that we can still do to improve our weapon systems and our acquisition process.
Yes, very good, and there's a lot more to talk about, but unfortunately we're out of time. Let me thank Dr. John Snyderly, the Learning Director for Engineering at the Defense Acquisition University. Dr. Snyderly, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Well, thank you.
You can find this entire interview online. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search Insight of the Month. I'm Jason Miller.
Thank you for listening to this week's Open Systems Insight show, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Open Systems.